Session number 10415, reel 4.
Mr. George Chambers, reel 4. You were telling me about the developments in the fighting in the Bocage country.
We were suffering a lot of casualties because of, particularly from mortars, the German mortars, and the fact that they were hit, there were lots of trees around there, and these things used to burst in the trees and scatter all around, and we suffered a lot from this. And in fact, one of our adjutants, Johnny Walker, he was killed there. From a burst in the trees, and we suffered a lot of casualties with this.
From splinters?
From splinters, yes.
As well as the shrapnel?
As well, yes. So, it was...
Were there any particular characters in the battalion at that time?
We always had some characters. Nobody particularly stands out, I don't suppose, that I can think of.
So you moved forward.
We had our CO, Bob Lidwell, who was a great character. He was a regular soldier who had been in GHQ in Cairo in a staff job, who dropped his rank to get back to an infantry battalion, which not many of the head office headquarters staff did, and he became our CO, and he was a very brave man. Who never seemed to be shaken at all, who was always very cool and calm despite how much stuff was flying around. We were in this village of Villers Bocage, and near there, which was a shambles. This was where the 7th Armoured and 51st got themselves involved a bit, and suffered a lot of casualties. And the Germans attacked with a lot of tanks, and they came through us quite a bit. They were a nasty sight as they pumped their stuff through you, wherever you were, through any building they saw, they put a shell through it. And this was rather a sudden thing when you. Very unpleasant indeed. However, we eventually got on the move, and we got to the Falaise Gap, which was one of the where the Germans had been caught. They used at that stage, they were using a lot of horse transport, and these animals slaughtered left, right and centre from the air. And there was the most incredible pile-up. Miles and miles of these vehicles, shelled and from the air and from the land, and dead horses and dead Germans all over the place, and cattle. The stench was indescribable. But it was it really was an appalling sight. Then we were then on the chase after that. It was very different going altogether, because you had no idea where the Germans were. You just went off and hoped for the best, that you weren't attacked by a large contingent of Germans. But in the main, they were away, and we went right on, and we were following the Guards Armoured Division. And when we were one day's we were going through, and suddenly I found that we were near the village of Gondecourt, where we'd been in 1940, and we actually were the first British troops to drive through Gondecourt after the freedom. And it was the incredible sight. They were all out in the streets, the flags were up, out, people waving and cheering as we went through. We got through to the a few miles further on, and we stopped, bivouacked for the night. Well, I went with Ian English and a chap called Chris Beatty, we went to the CEO and said we would like to go back, if we would be excused, and we'll drive back there and go to Gondicore again and see the people we were billeted with. So we did. The CEO said yes, and that's all right, and off we went. We were just in a jeep, and we only had, I think our pistols was only very foolhardy really, but we just all had our pistols with us, and we went back to Gondicore. And when we got there, there wasn't a flag to be seen, there was nobody on the streets, and we went to the local Tammany where the mayor, Monsieur Le Maire, used to live. We thought he might wondered if he was still there. Well, after a lot of banging on the door, eventually they came up from the cellars, and what had happened was, as soon as we'd gone through, the Germans had shelled the place again, so they thought that the Germans were coming back, so they'd all gone down into the cellars again, taking all the flags in and all the rest of it. Well, they came out, and we went into the mayor's pub. He'd been arrested by the Germans, and he'd had a pretty rough time of it. But you know, when we left there in 1940, we'd had our band instruments, and we'd left our band instruments behind when we went up into Belgium. And you know, this mayor, he'd hidden some of our instruments in his roof, some that the Germans had got. But he brought down several of the band instruments we'd left behind, which he'd kept all this time. So I was able to bring them back, and they are present there in the Regimental Museum. You know, they were handed over to us. There was a big drum, and there were some side drums, and I can't remember what else, but several. So we piled them into our jeep and brought them back with us, had them sent back home, which was a great thrill to see these again after all this time.
What did you think of Ian English and Chris Beatty? Two company commanders, yes. Quite well known.
They were incredible. Ian English, credible character. He got three MCs. He was wounded twice. He was a prisoner, and he escaped and came back to us again. And then he came into Normandy, and an invasion of Normandy, he was wounded again. And eventually we got him back again when we were at the end of the war. He still appeared again. So he got an MC of two bars.
What about Beatty? I think he was killed.
He was killed at Giel, and yeah, Giel, yes, shortly after the bit I'm talking about.
What was he like?
He was a very good county commander. And he's very young. Of course they were, of course, so was English, very young. They were straight from, more or less straight from school, you see, these chaps. John Leybourne. I was an old man in those days, or still am. very much so. But they were first-class chaps.
What happened next, then, after this incident? You mentioned Giel.
Oh, well, No, Giel was a little bit after that. We went on... Further on, we crossed into Belgium, and we followed the Guards Armoured Division into Brussels, which was quite an achievement, or quite an event. We were all invited out for a meal at night time. At night, and where they got it from, I don't know. We had a marvellous dinner in somebody's private house, with lashings of wine that they'd saved throughout the war for special occasion. We staggered back, having been told that we were, of course, we said, yes, you're all right, out you can go, you can have your freedom. We're here 48 hours or regrouping. We got back to our billets, which was, we were billeted in part of the palace, and we had a marvellous place there, luxury, and got back to be greeted by Revalley 0600, breakfast 0700, move 0800. We're off the next day. That was our regrouping in Brussels. So we went on from that, and then we came to this battle at Giel, which was a very short, sharp, tough event.
What do you remember about it?
Well, it was the rifle companies were involved in that. The headquarters were not affected, so we only picked up bits and pieces. But they were very sharply attacked by the Germans, and we lost quite a few people there, including Chris Beatty.
And then what?
Well, then, of course, we went on and on, and we got up to into Holland, where we got to Nijmegen, where this great big bridge over the Rhine. We got over there, and we were then trying to get up to Arnhem. The Guards Armoured were in front, and they didn't manage to get there, neither did we. So we were stuck there, and eventually winter came, and of course it was singularly unpleasant there. The Germans had the only recreation we had, we used to pull out for 24 hours, and we pulled out into Nijmegen. To get to Nijmegen, you had to go over this bridge, and the Germans had got this taped. There were great holes in the bridge where they'd shelled it. And you, when you went over this bridge, you drove like the clappers as fast as you could, bumping over the bed. They had put Bailey bridges over it to cover the holes, and you just drove over like the clappers in the hopes that you weren't hit as you went through. It was an unpleasant experience to go there, but we had the odd day there and back, or night in there. There's nothing much to do there. There was constant shelling all the time, but we, although, funny enough, after what I was told last night, there was a battle, and I can't remember anything about it. It was a very small one in Holland. And this, we were just billeted in houses and around the place.
What state was the battalion in?
We were getting very tired then. And then, of course, came the news that we were going back to England. We were being sent. There was a cadre, what they called a cadre, of so many officers and so many other ranks, picked from those who had been with the battalion the longest time. They were sent back to England because it was said we couldn't maintain a full division, and because of what was to be the casualties expected crossing the Rhine. So they were pulled back. They pulled back one division, and then we were sent back as a training division to England, where we were trained every odds and sods from all over the place, including REOC, REME, gunners, searchlights, and everybody else trained as infantiers, who were not very keen on being transferred to the infantry.
How did you feel about that change in role for the battalion?
Personally, we were thankful. Those who were left us were very thankful to get out of it. We were still alive, and that was the main consideration.
Do you think it was a necessary move that the battalion couldn't have kept?
I think this was a more political move than anything else. The division had suffered a lot of casualties, and there had been ever since 1939. And I think they felt that if they had many more casualties from the division, if they'd been from the older people or from any more casualties from Durham, it would be a bad thing politically for the country.
You mean there
must have
been a bad reaction in Durham?
Well, it was felt that the Durhams had suffered tremendous casualties, and they didn't want to inflict any more, I suppose. That was largely the reason. As it happened, of course, there were very few casualties crossing the Rhine, as it turned out, but then that wasn't to be thought. They thought there would have been.
Where were you training all these? These people were posted to the battalion for training.
Yes, we were then training in Yorkshire. We were sent to a place called Keighley, a mill town in Yorkshire near Leeds, Bradford.
And that went on to...
And we were sent off doing various courses and around the place. In fact, we came to Newcastle as a street fighting exercise in parts of Newcastle.
What do you remember about that?
I remember coming to see the place because I wasn't involved in that. But there was the rifle companies were sent up there. But apart from that, we were on various training exercises all over the place. Various different parts. Accustomed to living in a peaceful existence was rather a pleasant experience, to say the least of it.
Were drafts sent out from the people you were training
to
other battalions?
Well, I don't know what happened to them or where they went. We did a course of a certain number of people and then did it again. Where they went to, heaven alone knows, we didn't know. They left us and they were posted at all sorts of places.
And that was till the end of the war?
Yes, till the end of the war. We were there until the end of the war, and then eventually we went over to Harrogate, where the battalion was finally disbanded. I'd been demobbed by then. I was demobbed in the October.
And you went back to the bank, I presume?
Yes, yes, I did.
Did you retain your territorial connection? Did you?
Well, there was no such thing immediately after the war. It did start up. A lovely word, it was resuscitated. And I joined the 8th Battalion again. I was then still living in Newcastle. I joined again and got my old job back at OC Headquarter Company, PMC. And then I was moved by the bank from Newcastle to Liverpool. So I finally gave up the TA. I had to come out because I couldn't do it. I was married and had a young child and I couldn't devote any more. Living in Liverpool, I couldn't get over to the training at all.
You wouldn't have joined
Durham.
Another unit then?
No, I didn't want to join another unit after having been all the times with the DLI. So,
the Durham Light Infantry were very important then to you as a regiment?
Well, it was very important, yes. And one had one develops a tremendous friendship with people who you were with through the war. And it's still today, one still has. We have a yearly meeting of the brigade, 1 year in London, 1 year in Durham, and you pick up where you left off, and you're still, you're still with as friendly as you were. It's something you went through together, and it's always there.
Thank you very much.
It's a feeling one gets.